Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are delighted that you've stayed tuned in.
We are. Delighted's a good word.
That is a good word.
We'd like to remind you, if you'd like to be part of the show, you can check us out on Facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can find us on the Twitters. You can find us on the emails, just however you kids are.
Instagram. They're all at The Music Row Show, so we made it pretty easy.
On Instagram right now. We'll throw some pictures up later.
Yeah.
So
after the show.
Yeah, but oh my gosh.
I know.
I am so excited. Okay, so let's do this, Hino. Make a great introduction.
Don't mess up. Well, listen, after chasing this poor lady for almost 10 years now, we finally get to sit down and visit with Grammy Award-winning hit songwriter and publisher Liz Rose. So many hits, really, so many hits. Among those are a bunch for Taylor Swift, Tim McGraw, Teardrops on My Guitar, White Horse, You Belong With Me, and a bunch of others. But a lot of great hits for other artists like Eli Young Band's Crazy Girl. Love that song. Mm-hmm. She's won many, many awards over the years. I forgot to mention Little Big Town's Girl Crush and Sober. Girl Crush, I love that song. That is a great song. Lots of awards, Grammy Awards, Songwriters of the Year, Song of the Year, and so many more. She runs her own publishing company called Liz Rose Music. And great name for a publishing company. I don't know how you came up with that.
There was three other people that had that name.
Yeah,
first.
She had to arm wrestle them over it.
Yeah,
it was a story too.
But she got it, and we are now thrilled to say Liz Rose, welcome finally to the Music Bros Show. Yeah,
thank you. Woo! I didn't know I was being chased.
You were. Yeah. Get on in that microphone. We want to hear every word you have to say.
Well, anyway, that sounds fun with all you saying all that stuff. I'm like, maybe I am a songwriter.
Look at that.
Maybe I should keep doing it. No, it took a long time for me to really have the nerve to say that. So,
I read that you said that. Why do you think that is?
Because I didn't start out as a songwriter. I just fell into it, honestly. And so there are so many great songwriters and that have been writing their whole lives. And, so it took... And because I fell into it, and it was never something that I was even thought I could do, it took a long time before I felt like I deserved to say that.
Well, you might be, in 10 years of doing this, the only songwriter guest we've had on the show who didn't move to Nashville to be a songwriter.
No.
Your family came to town, and you were a stay-at-home mom, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, how did you fall into becoming a song plugger? Because that was first, right?
Yeah, I met somebody at a music business wedding. Mm-hmm. John Lytle, in fact. At his wedding.
Okay.
And I met Ken Biddy, who married Sheila Shipley. Biddy, and we just started talking. It was like one of those two-day weddings, and we started talking, and he said, I asked me if I worked, and I said, well, my kids are about to be in school, and I want to work. I was interning at a management company, maybe, with John Dotson.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay. He had Steve Earle, and I begged them to let me do that. And I also worked for Brooks and Dunn in their fan club, I think. I don't remember what I did, but I did something. And because I got to go to a Christmas party. They were good friends of ours, too. So I just wanted to work. The kids were in school, and I wanted to work. And so Ken said, I think you'd make a great song plugger. And I was like, what's that? But if it's a job, okay. I mean, and that's kind of what I've always done is like, oh, that's a job? Okay, I'll do that. I was in banking. I was in, all kinds of
stuff.
We
need a brain surgeon.
Retail. Okay. Oh, well, hey, don't tell. Sometimes I'm the person in a restaurant when it's like going down the tubes and they're in the weeds and you're looking around. I'm like going, I could straighten this restaurant. I can make this place run. I think I'm just going to get a job here and fix this thing. But that's me, honestly. So So I just said, okay. So I showed up at his office, and he just started telling, you know, training me. And, you know, I think my first meeting was with Tony Brown, but I had known him for years. So he, you know, so it was easy, you know, where that's probably everybody's scariest last meeting they get. It was my first pitch meeting. And from there, I loved doing it. And I started meeting, you know, writers and finding songs and thought, well, maybe I could just do this. So I started and I went and rented one little office and left Ken's and went and got one office, one room, and started a publishing company with writers, and just didn't actually do single song contracts, but did some single songs and started mm-hmm. pitching their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be longer than y'all wanted to hear.
No. It's an hour of show. You're doing great.
And then a couple of big writers hired me as an independent plugger, Will Robinson and Kent Blazy and Jason Bloom.
Okay.
And so that wasn't too shabby. So that's how I got into rooms. You know, I got into meetings is because I had these big writers' catalogs. And I was their independent song plugger. And so from that, I started a publishing company. And then I started a company called King Lizard Music with Kingsley Brock. And some great songs came out of there. And in fact, you just had Frank Liddell. And Frank and I shared an office building together. Yeah. We had both of our companies in there. And from there, at King Lizard, I started writing with one of my writers, Kim McLean.
Yeah.
And Kim just taught me how to write. I had written a couple of, like, you know, drinking, oh, let's write a song, you know, with my husband and some friends. But she really nurtured me and really taught me how to write songs. We started getting cuts. And then that company folded, and Jody Williams bought the catalog and called me up, and I had to go get another job because that company closed. And so Jody bought that catalog. I was working somewhere else. Jody called me and said, I'm signing Kim and I'm listening to all these songs and I'm buying this catalog and I think you're a songwriter. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm a song plugger, you know, and everybody in town knew me as a song plugger. So I was writing songs under the name Gracie Sheridan.
Oh, and he knew.
He was like, is this you? And he knew that I was writing with Kim. And so he talked me into being a songwriter.
Can I just say, think about this. Every writer that comes to this town is trying desperately to have anybody know who they are. To have that, so to have somebody know their name. And meanwhile, Gracie Sheridan doesn't exist, and she's getting cuts. That is hilarious.
Or she's a stripper somewhere. I don't know.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
You know what?
There's nothing wrong with that. No judgment here.
So, have you ever gone back and changed the credits on those songs to your own name?
You know what? It was on a song called If That Chair Could Talk.
Yeah.
And Rachel Proctor cut it. And Carol Ann Mobley at the time was at RC. And she called me and she said, are you this Gracie? And I said, yeah. And she goes, why don't you put your real name on there? And I was like, because I would think y'all would freak out because I'm pitching you songs from other catalogs and I'm a songwriter.
I see that.
And it was a funny thing where, you know, people like Frank were great. Everybody was actually really supportive. I mean, they were really supportive. So it was, so I segued into songwriting because of Jody.
So then did you change it to your own name on that song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So now if we go back and look at all those old songs,
they all say Liz Rose. Rose. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good.
Unless she's
getting checks somewhere.
Yeah, there's some bank account somewhere that nobody's touched in years.
Yeah.
One of the most common questions that we get at festivals or even emailed to the show, or back when we used to take call-ins, we used to get this a lot of times, was, I don't play an instrument, but I think I write what might be song lyrics. How do I get started? And so I'm just curious, obviously Kim helped you, but has there ever been pressure on you to learn an instrument or
pressure on me, but from myself?
Okay.
I'm trying to learn now. I'm trying to just learn how to play my songs.
I saw a picture of you holding the guitar.
That feels so good at it. But, I can stumble through every once in a while. But no, a lot of people have said don't told me not to learn because when I was first learning and I would go into the room and I was like doing this and trying to, and it completely broke my flow.
It takes just
completely,
you out of it.
It took me out of it. And I could see it because I remember writing with people and they would come in, usually young people, and they would be learning how to play guitar. And not even, I have a certain a friend that I write with all the time, and she was learning how to play guitar, and we were like writing a record, and I was like, this is not time for a guitar lesson. We need to be writing a song. So I realized what that does, and I don't really hear lyrics until I hear music. And so I just everybody says it'll completely ruin my writing if I learn how to play, if I try to play
while
and
you're writing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's one thing to learn guitar enough to be playing the songs that you've already written.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you're going to walk into a room.
I'm too old for that.
Listen to you.
I mean, it's, you know, I'm too old, but I'm trying to learn.
So have you had other people that are lyricists, you know, that are out around the country as you're going and doing shows and stuff that are saying, okay, how do I meet musicians or how do I?
Yeah, I get that a lot. And I just say, put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Put yourself out there, meet people. You know, I think a lot of people come to town and want to write with the biggest writers in town. And of course you do, but are you going to learn anything from that? No. You've
right.
got to find your own. I mean, I have so many young people that come to town and I try to help them, but I also say, we're not writing. You're not going to learn anything from me. I mean, I do write, but more than anything, I want them to get out and go to songwriters nights and meet people that are in their own spot so that they can get this camaraderie going.
Start building a tribe.
And find their sound. You know, because, I just think that they work together better that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's, you know, I mean,
find those instrumentalists out there.
I found it interesting. You said a minute ago that you don't think of lyrics unless you're hearing a melody. So as mainly a lyric person, a lyricist, how much input do you have into the melody when you're writing with somebody? I mean, are you saying, oh, I hate that or
oh,
try
no,
this?
No, no.
Or
I'll try and sing something. And sometimes we use it. I'm not much of a singer, but I do hear melodies.
Okay, good.
So, but I can walk in the room and be sitting there freaking out going, I've got nothing today. I've got nothing on my brain. And someone will start playing guitar or piano and I'm like, blah, 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 blah. You know,
that's awesome.
That's just where it comes from.
I've always found it a particularly tough challenge to try to put lyrics to a completed, you know, like you got a melody that's already done and everything. And then, okay, here, put some words to this as opposed to doing it as it's being created. Is that hard for you as well?
I've tried to do that.
Yeah.
I honestly usually end up letting somebody down.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. I do. Now, if they're in the room with me and they're going, here it is, and I'm going, okay, what do you want to hear? Because usually if they've done that, they're hearing melodies. And
right.
they're hearing, I want it to go this way. And I'm usually hearing it and it's going this way. So
yeah.
If they're in the room, that's good. I've tried it. I've had people send me stuff and said, would you, you know, top line this and put, and I have to admit if they hear this right now, I'm sorry if you were one of them, because I usually let them down. It's bad. I like to have the
interaction.
I like the interaction.
Yeah.
I like for the person to be in the room and to work on it together.
That's awesome. Well, listen, we need to take a break, but some of the folks that we like to interact with are the folks over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Listen to that
happens
segue.
To be,
he is the king of the segue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The sponsor for this segment.
Yes, they're great.
Why is that, Scott?
Well, it depends. If you want to go to get your car serviced, they're great because you never feel like you just got taken.
That's,
you
never,
know,
never.
So they do great work. They're honest. They're fair. And then if you're going to go out and looking for a car, you don't get jumped. You don't get that, yeah, that feeling in your gut like, oh, I got to go look for a car. You don't get that there. So they're great people. Go see George, the owner. Let him know that you heard about him on the Music Row show. He's going to take great care of you, and you'll be so happy that you went to Toyota of Cool Springs.
.com. That's the website, ToyotaOfCoolSprings.com. Isn't that amazing? We're going to be back with a whole lot more of Liz Rose here on the Music Row Show. So come.
We played caps and robbers in the streets around our house. It was fun and games back then, but it ain't funny now, here in our town. Just a bunch of kids.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's the new Tyler Farr single. That's a song called Our Town.
That's a good song.
That is a cool song. I like that. Now, I'm guessing that's one of on your... Uh-huh. Publishing label?
Wrote it with Nathan Chapman and Seth Ennis.
Okay.
Seth Ennis, who's a new artist on Sony, mm-hmm. who has a new single coming out soon, or Woke Up in Nashville. But we wrote that after I was in Dallas one weekend after the shootings.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Right.
And it just hit me. It just killed me to see what was going
that
on
wasn't
in
that
Dallas.
Long ago. Mm-mm. Yeah.
No, we literally. I was there that weekend that happened on a Thursday. I was there that weekend. I came back and wrote with Nathan and Seth, I think, on Tuesday. And I said, I've got this thing on my mind about Dallas that and it's any town. This ain't our town. This doesn't happen here. We don't act like this. This is not how we grew up. So,
right.
But it related to all of our towns and everywhere we grew up. So we wrote it that day, and Seth took it to the label, and the label loved it, and they took it to Tyler, and he cut it, and it's the first single.
Oh, that is awesome.
It's just, miracle.
That makes me think of something, in that sometimes you hear songs that, you know, are ripped from the headlines or very topical, and they get dated pretty quick, and they're just kind of clunkily done. And that you went out of your way to make it universal. Talk about, you know, when you want to do a song about a very specific topic, but you don't want it to be like a year from now be old news,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Well, I think we were just really writing an emotion that I was having that day. It was, I literally looked at the TV in a restaurant on Saturday night and said, this is not our town. This is not what happens here. This just doesn't happen. And we had, you know, football jersey. There's a line in it. The only color we care about is football jersey blue. And we had green, and then we started talking, and I said, well, it's, you know, this is kind of Dallas. And we were like, well, why don't we put blue? And everybody has green or everybody has blue. So we wanted to make sure that every town relates to it. Every town feels that way and everybody grew up that way. So we really did want to, we didn't go specifically, you know, and try and, you know, milk what happened. It was just, it's kind of everybody's feeling right now everywhere, you know, every town USA right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It could be any town.
Wow. That's so cool.
I like that. I like that.
That is cool. Well, you know what? We're going to talk more, but, you know, Phil's there. He's plugged into the guitar.
The guitar's plugged into him. Nice. It's just a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing.
What should we sing?
You want to do Girl Crush?
Yeah.
Oh, would love
that.
Is
that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
I got a girl crush. I hate to admit it, but I got a hard rush, ain't slowing down. I got it real bad, want everything she has. That smile in that midnight laugh she's giving you now. I wanna taste her lips, yeah, 'cause they taste like you. I wanna drown myself in a bottle of her perfume. I want her long blonde hair, I want her magic touch, yeah, 'cause maybe then you'd want me just as much. I've got a girl crush, I don't get no sleep, I don't get no peace thinking about her under your bed sheets, the way that she's whispering, way that she's pulling you in. Lord knows I've tried, I can't get her off my mind. I wanna taste her lips, yeah, 'cause they taste like you. I wanna drown myself in a bottle of her perfume. Yeah, 'cause maybe then you'd want me just as much. I've got a girl crush, I've got a girl crush, I've got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I've got a hard rush, and it ain't slowing down.
Yeah. Woo! How about
very
that?
Very nice. I love
Sorry.
That. Well, talk about writing that one and what you made of the, you know, quote unquote controversy that happened after
controversial,
that.
Controversial, Phil.
Yeah, you know.
Controversial.
Such that it was.
You know, it's, we keep telling this story. Literally, Hillary, Lindsay, and Lori McKenna were at my house. We do this thing called Love Junkies, and I locked them in my house for 3 days, and I kicked my husband out. Bless his heart.
He's in the parking lot right now.
Hey, Tom. Wake up. We're talking about you.
He's in his pajamas. He's so great. I mean, he goes to Dallas or wherever, and the girls come over and we stay in the house. And we got up one morning and I was cooking eggs and Lori was making coffee. And she said, "Hey, Liz, I have a song idea I want to write." And she goes, "What do you think about writing a song called Girl Crush?" And I literally said, "No, we're not. No, how are we going to write that? That sounds really hard." I'm the lazy writer. No, I just was like, I was like, "Lori, I don't really know if three girls can write a song called Girl Crush." And she said, no. I really think it'd be a cool, I just, you know, I saw the hashtag and, you know, I just love the way it looks. It could be really cool. And I was like,
had she thought of the story yet at that point?
You know, I think she had, but I didn't even, I don't know that it really felt like it all came together as we started doing it. 'Cause she said, "I just really think there's a way we can write it. And I think it'd be really cool." And as we're saying that, and I said, "No," again, Hillary comes in and she said, "Hey, Hillary, I want to write a song called Girl Crush." Hillary literally, and I'm not kidding you, picked up the guitar, sat down on the couch, looked up at us and sang, "I got a girl crush, hate to admit it, but I got a hard rush, ain't slowing down," and looked at us and went, "You mean like that?
Are you kidding me?"
No.
Hillary?
No.
Oh.
we've had it with you. That's incredible.
Literally, that's what happened.
Wow.
And I remember jumping in the couch. Lori jumped on the other couch, and we went, yes, that's exactly what we were thinking. And then I think that Lori's like, you know, I mean, she's got a crush on the girl because the girl's got the guy, and she really wants the guy. And I was like, I don't know, it sounds cool, but let's just make things rhyme. And the next thing you know, we had the song was done, and we were like, wow, this is so cool. Nobody's going to cut it, but it's so cool. And Karen and Kimberly were coming over that day to write. Karen Fairchild and Kimberly Schlattman, Little Big Town. And they came over and sat down and said, well, we want to hear what y'all have been writing. So we played them a couple of things. And then we're kind of looking at each other. And I said, we've got one more, and it's y'all won't cut it. But it's really cool. We just want you to hear it just because we love it. But you will not cut this because they're a band. And,
sure,
it, you know,
sure.
It was going to be. Halfway through it, they were just like going, are you crazy? Why wouldn't we cut this? We love this so much.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. So, I mean, they literally cut it off of our iPhone work tape.
So what happened to the eggs? They didn't burn, did they?
I don't know if we ever ate them. I mean, literally, that's a good question. Wow. I don't know.
They're still cooking.
We do a lot of eating standing up and, you know, a lot of snacking. And we just put a bunch of stuff on a plate and, you know.
Well, how cool to go from that to winning Song of the Year. That's just amazing.
You know, it was just unbelievable that they cut it. And unbelievable that they were such champions of it, and that Jay's production was so simple and so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it was like, then they called and said, we cut it. And we're like, wow, really? And then it's like, it's going to be, we're thinking for, you know, we're thinking single at some time. And then it's like, we're thinking next single. And we're like, what? And then it was like, well, there's a controversy. There's a problem. You know, they thought we were being, they said, calculating and controversial, I think were the words. And we are the least calculating, controversial three females in the world. We're like, we're just writing songs. We didn't even have time to think about it. We just thought, that's a cool
song. It probably
never
even occurred to you that people would react the way they did.
No.
Because it seemed to me, anybody that I talked to that had that reaction
hadn't
really listened to the song.
No, if you listen to the song,
it's pretty clear what it's about.
Yeah, but when it's, you know, when she's, you know, I want to taste her lips because they take, you know, I mean, I get it because I'm an old lady. So I kind of went, I don't know. But, you know, I was like, oh, but it's so cool. It's just, you know, and we just had fun writing the song.
Yeah.
We did not have time to think all that through because the girls were coming over like at 11:30. So this was like 9:30 in the morning.
Right.
And
so you guys banged it up pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like our fun morning song, basically.
That is so cool.
That's amazing.
You know?
So before we go to break, I want to ask you about my favorite. This is my favorite song of yours that's been recorded. Songs About Rain.
Oh
my gosh. I've loved that song since the first time I heard it. Gary Allen. How did your co-writer save that chorus? And do you remember how it went originally?
I don't.
No?
I don't remember how it went. I just know that it was not anywhere near as cool as it ended up being after he left.
So you guys finished your session. It was Pat McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens?
He left and he got about halfway home and he called me and he goes, hey, Liz, I've been thinking about something. And I'm just going to run this past you. And if you don't like it, it's okay. But what if we did this? And he started singing the chorus the way it, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I didn't know, can we do that? And he was like, yeah, I think we can do that.
Because it's name all check. Titles.
Yeah. So I didn't know if, you know, if we could do that, but he assured me we could. And so we did. And that's still one of my favorites.
Oh, it's such a great song.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I love that song.
So just out of curiosity, when you do something like that and you use titles from other songs, Is there any sort of legal thing you got to do to clear that?
No,
or?
I don't know. I think it's good for the songs.
Yeah, sure.
I think it makes people go look those songs up.
And it's not like you were using the melodies too, or anything like that.
Or the lyrics. We were just using the titles. And I think it's kind of paying, you know, respect to those great songs.
It's a tremendous, tremendous song.
Thank you.
Let's take a break.
We'll be back with a whole lot more of Liz Rose here on the Music Row Show.
He takes off his hat, says the world moves too fast. No, it sure ain't how it used to be. There's lines on his face, his hands shake with age. Oh, but he's still a mountain to me. Just like fun wine.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. You're listening to Alyssa Michaela doing a song called Cowboys Like That. And we're here with Liz Rose, one of the writers of that song and publisher, I'm guessing, also.
Mm-hmm. And Emily Shackleton.
And Emily. Alyssa, we were just talking about Emily.
Emily,
you're listening, we're friendly. We don't bite. Come on.
Well, let's we have to bring this up for a few minutes.
We do.
Yeah. Let's talk Taylor just for a minute. I'm not going to say his name, but a guest of ours once who was a publisher told us that he had recommended you stop spending time with that skinny middle school girl. And we don't want to say his name, but he said, he goes, I was totally wrong. And Liz really fought and said, no, she's turning a corner and I'm not going to stop. And, I felt that was so indicative of who you were, even though I didn't know you, but, I love that story. So talk about that. And what was it that you saw was changing, and how did you build that writing relationship? Because it's different than a regular co-write relationship.
Yeah. Well, what I said when he said, I think you're spending a lot of time on this, I said, so it's the funnest, easiest thing I do all week. It was like usually my third write on a Tuesday.
Wow.
And but it was the funnest thing because she was so full of something to say. It was so easy and so fun, and she always had a story to tell. She always had something she had to write about. Mm-hmm. And you know, I believe at the time she was between deals. She had left her first development deal. Mm-hmm. So she didn't even have a deal. And I was like, I think he said, you know, she didn't have a deal anymore. And a lot of people I think kind of, you know, that's as writers do when someone, you know, because everybody's busy and they're like, well, you know, I loved being in a room with her. There's just, as a writer, there was just nothing else like it. Her, what comes out of her is just brilliant. And I knew she was going to do something. And we weren't, you know, the songs, I think the other thing was, is that the songs were so tailored, tailored toward Taylor, that I think other people were looking and going, well, what are we going to do with these songs?
Yeah,
I mean,
can't pitch this.
A song with Drew, you know, this is, and I was like, she knows exactly what she's saying and she's writing her songs and she's going to do something. She will do something with these songs. She's too driven. She's too smart. She's too talented and she's too driven and I'm having fun. Basically it all came down to, I was having fun.
If you were banging your head against a wall every Tuesday, you wouldn't have kept doing
it was so easy. We just bounced off each other so well. It was just fun.
That's cool.
Interesting. Well, as the father of three girls, and I have a Caitlin Rose too, by the way.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, my middle daughter's Caitlin Rose. But my youngest is dabbling in writing, and so since you've worked with young kids, what is the best way to help along a novice young writer without getting in the way?
Well, honestly, my advice to him usually is that there is no fairy dust here. I helped Taylor write those songs, but those were Taylor's songs. Mm-hmm. I didn't get in the way. I didn't mess with her words. I didn't say, we can't say that. I learned real fast, if you tried to steer her down another path and say, she would just
close
keep,
up.
No. She would just keep going. She would like, yeah, well, this is the way we're going. So you just, but I try and say, go figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. Go figure out how to write your songs. Go find your voice. Those were Taylor's songs. Those were her stories. That was her voice. Now right. Go figure out, either in life and experiences, but when you're young, you really don't have a lot,
right.
But you have to have a huge imagination.
Right.
And a lot of emotion and a lot of heart and a lot of, you know, talent. I mean, it just comes out of her. I mean, it was amazing.
Right. But just in terms of, you know, like, let's say in my case, if I was just wanting to, you know, help her out, but without getting in the way, just encourage her to have an imagination is what I think.
Learn how to play guitar.
She's doing.
Or piano.
Yeah. Both.
Just because it's power.
Right.
And it helps. And just write it down.
Yeah.
There are no bad songs. I don't believe that there are bad songs. I think if someone sits down and writes a song and finishes it, there's something in that song that was worth your time.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a lesson. So write, and keep writing. And don't be afraid to put down your feelings or your emotions.
My favorite moment came about a year ago. She came to me with a spiral note-bound notebook, 3 pages in tiny little letters, completely filled up with words. And she comes to me and she says, Dad, is this enough for a song? I was like, yeah.
That's enough for an album.
And then some.
All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back with one more segment with Liz Rose. And you're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around.
Behind her favorite picture of her and her daddy and her brother, Grand Canyon 19-something or other, and the sun was going down, and they were standing with their backs to the world. Tuesday afternoons, she'd pick me up from school, big yellow Buick, we'd do all the things moms and daughters do. Couple dresses, brand new pair of shoes. She could never say no to a baby girl.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
We'd empty the cart, one piece.
We're here with Liz Rose, and that's actually Liz Rose singing. Brand new song of hers called Grocery Money, off her forthcoming album. We were talking about it a little bit earlier. Produced by Mac McAnally, one of our favorites. So we cannot wait to hear that. Cannot wait to hear that. My wife and I were laughing just like 2-3 days ago about a song that she got cut recently, and we were listening to it, and she was like, I didn't realize at the time, but the chorus has no rhymes in it at all. And you don't really notice it until somebody points it out, and you're like, oh, yeah. So how stressed do you get about rhymes and hard rhymes versus near rhymes and all that kind of thing?
Well, I like to rhyme.
Yeah.
Don't I, Phil? I like to rhyme.
Yeah. Phil has a knowing smile on his face right now for all of you listening on the radio.
Huh. Usually I'll use other words, but I usually will tell a writer, come on now, you're being lazy. We can find the rhyme. It's good to rhyme.
Yeah.
But it's also cool to not, when it works.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful thing when you're, you know, in a stream of consciousness and it doesn't.
Yeah.
Everything doesn't rhyme.
Once in a while.
And it's hard to do. So it's probably easier to rhyme. So mm-hmm.
I can't remember which one, but one of Jeffrey Steele's big hits has no rhymes in the chorus. And it wasn't until somebody pointed it out to me that I noticed it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just the way it was put together. You just don't.
And I think when you're writing a song, you naturally want to rhyme. You naturally want to go to the rhyme. So I think it's hard not to. And so that just probably means I'm lazy. Because
how about
I
near
just
rhymes?
Rhyme.
Are you okay with those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who was it? Somebody was on our show not too long ago that said, you know, if it's perfect rhyme or nothing.
No, I don't really have
rules. We've had a few like that. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. What happens, because you're pretty much exclusively co-writing. So what happens if this ever happens when a great idea gets a mediocre co-write and at the end you're going, man, I don't love this and that idea was so good? I mean, do you just let it go and you move on?
I do.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I do. And I think maybe it really wasn't a great idea, you know?
Well, interesting.
I mean, you know, but I'm like, I just move on. I don't get attached to, and I don't usually have a lot of ideas. I mean, sometimes I do, and I usually figure out who I want to write it with. If it's something that's really, you know, that I'm really excited about, I usually know who I'm going to write it with because I'm usually already called them and said.
Right.
But normally my ideas a lot of times come out of the room, what's in the room.
Okay.
Whatever we're talking
about.
You go
in, just open and let it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned Little Big Town earlier. We talked about Girl Crush, but there's so many great songs. You have a bunch of songs on Painkiller. Great album. What's it like? What's your advice for writers if you get a chance to write with an entire group? Now you've got like five, six people in the room, and that's a lot of opinions and ideas flying around. How do you deal with that?
Well, they're such fantastic people. I mean,
well, I don't mean them specifically.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. And for me, because I don't play guitar and I'm not really a singer, it's really hard. Lori McKenna can do it. Lori McKenna can do it. Me, not so much. But I've tried that a couple of times. Normally, Hillary and Lori and I will write with Kimberly and Karen.
Okay.
And, sometimes I write.
That's still, you know, five people, though. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you listen to Tumble and Fall,
yeah,
it took five people to write that song. Wow. There was a lot going on. I mean, it was really intricate, and it was a lot of work. Karen was so brilliant, and she knew everything she wanted to hear. So, I mean, everybody, you know, worked really hard on that song, and to have their harmonies, Karen and Kimberly's harmonies, and, you know, and Hillary and Lori, and I think I was just pouring the wine, really. But they let me keep my name.
Everybody
on the
song. Needs but, somebody no. pouring the wine. In fact, Michael, my cup is empty. What's going on here?
So I don't think I've ever asked a guest this, but what's the difference in a good line and a great line? Because it seems like that you are very driven to get the best out of the lines. And do you have an example of making a good one better, or a situation where you had a decent line, but you guys said, what else could we do to this?
The difference in a good line, I think it's the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the goosebumps. I think it's the, when you know, when you all go, oh man, that's the difference in a good line and a great line.
Mm.
And just trying to make it a little more interesting. And we all say this, trying to say it in a way that it's not been said.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely blows me away every day that we do that, because it's crazy. Even song ideas, sometimes you'll go, I think that title's been written, you know, a lot. And if you just don't fight it and you just go with what's in the room, sometimes you walk out and it may be the same title that maybe was written 10, 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's not on purpose. It's accidentally.
Yeah.
But it just found a different spin.
Right.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And for me, you know, it's all about emotion for me. It's either, you know, it's got to make you do something. It's got to make you laugh, cry, or dance, you know, or want to drink. I mean, that's what I mean.
Some of us don't need a song for that. I'm just saying.
Wait a minute. Why are you pointing at this nice guy?
Oh, sorry, guy.
Poor Brad.
So as a publisher who...
Brad, you make me want to drink.
As a publisher who's also a songwriter, you know, how do you keep those separate? I mean, do you ever... Does publisher Liz ever creep into your writing sessions?
Never.
Get in writer Liz's
Never.
Way? Interesting.
Never. Never.
So
my
never?
Writers, no, honestly, I believe I'm publisher in name only. I do not critique or write or overwrite or advise the writers at our company. I have people, my son Scott runs the company. He's incredible, Brad. And Allison, and that's their deal. But we really don't mess with the writers. They have their own thing, and so we kind of just trust them to know what they're doing, and mm-hmm. and they write the songs. But no, I'm a terrible writer publisher. Sorry, writers.
Well, I kind of meant more for like your writing when you are writing. Does the publisher
Never.
Side of your brain ever kind of creep in and go?
If it did, I'd get more cuts.
Oh, really?
I'm terrible at it. I am totally a writer. I could never think, if we say this, it'll get on the radio, and if we say this, it won't get on the radio. I don't write specifically for artists. If you say an artist's name in the room, I'm done. I can't think after that.
Unless the artist is in the room.
If
with
the
you,
artist is in the room,
that's
that is
different.
Fantastic. But if they're not, I start trying to get in their brain, and then I start second guessing everything, and it kind of just the Blake Shelton song, "Every Goodbye," mm-hmm. I wrote with Ryan Hurd and Busby, and we started talking, and somebody said, "Why don't we write something for Blake?" And Ryan and I went, "I think all three." No, let's not talk about an artist. Let's write for Ryan. Let's write for Ryan. And we wrote, what we were trying to do is write a song for Ryan, and it did end up being Blake. But I start trying to get in their heads. And so, no, I'm not good at that. I should be, but I'm not.
But that's okay. But that's interesting, though, because, I mean, just last hour we were talking with Frank about the difference the type of song you get out of when it's an artist just writing it for themselves rather than for pitching. You just get a different kind of song, because sometimes maybe more personal, because you're not thinking about.
Yeah, I'm just not good at it. I wish I was. Even when I was a really strong song plugger, I mean, like, that's what I did every day, all day. I still couldn't. I still couldn't do it. I don't know why.
Well, listen, you have a new album that's going to be coming out sooner or later. First, thank you so much. This hour
has it got a name
by.
Yet? It's called Swimming Alone. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but it's going to be, it's really,
when you figure out
it's
what
a
you're
labor
gonna,
of love.
When you figure out what you're going to do with it, will you come back?
Absolutely.
Okay, Brad, you heard that. So she's going to come back. Phil, are you playing anywhere this week? What do you got going on?
Pull up that mic there. There you go.
You know what? Doing my 300th show at the Listening Room.
Yeah,
wow.
On Saturday night. So, I mean, 300 shows
at
the
Listening
Room in over 8 years. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
I know.
Awesome.
You had anywhere this week?
No. Next thing I got is the Frank Brown Festival coming up in a few weeks. So.
Okay. All right. I'm in East Tennessee playing the Ship Pub in Gatlinburg, and then Louisville at the
Good night,
station.
Everybody.